This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour being brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, lots and lots of snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by my two personal favorites, the barrels of the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And, of course, it is always great to be joined by Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome.
As always, it's great to be here. I hope you guys are having a fantastic day over there.
Absolutely. I will start with this. It's not Steeler-related, but it's Vikings-related. And you just never know when you draft somebody what the result is going to be. And J.J. McCarthy is now going to need surgery because of a torn meniscus. I know they've signed Sam Darnold's there, but what kind of blow is this to what the Vikings at least wanted to start doing?
I would have thought, and all the signs lead up to this. I don't think the Vikings are even really trying to hide much of it, but I would have thought their plan was to be patient with J.J. McCarthy. Basically, the same song and dance we hear about rookie quarterbacks. Most often now, and they end up taking over within the first 6 weeks of the season. I would have thought that would have been the plan. At least the door would have been open for that. Obviously, that's not going to be the case now. There are two different types of meniscus tears. One, basically, mm-hmm. You kind of shave it off a little bit. The other one is you have to repair the whole thing. So you can't do it arthroscopically. You have to make the incision and go in. It's a longer recovery period. That would almost certainly put him on the IR and knock him out till week six of the NFL season. If that's the case, very unlikely that he would start for this season, certainly not until the end of the year. So not a great situation for what I would think that they would have hoped to have. At the same time, though, Sam Darnold's contract, in my opinion, was interesting enough when he signed it, that it really kind of said, we're going to give you top of market backup quarterback money. I know that kind of seems like a contradiction in terms, but it's a competitive position. The best ones were making 7-8 a year, something like that. They gave Darnold 10. Mm-hmm. What they basically said on a one-year deal, what they basically said is, we're going to draft a quarterback. So we want you to be the starter. We expect you to be the starter. We're going to compensate you above market so you sign here knowing full well the situation that you're getting into. It's possible that you don't start at some point this season, depending on what happens. But for now, we're going to lock into this. It's your opportunity to lead us, to get film, to continue your NFL career at a pretty lucrative rate. So now you're saddled with him for 16 games. Makes you wonder if Darnold's agent wouldn't have negotiated a little bit more if he knew that his client was going to be the starter the full time. Obviously not the ideal situation for the Vikings, but they believe in Darnold. Everything that I have heard and everything I've seen, he was going to be the starter week one without question anyway. What I hear from camp as far as Darnold goes is he's got a pretty good grasp of what they're asking him to do. He's executed pretty well. I mean, all the attention obviously is on McCarthy for a variety of reasons, but I think they might be all right with Darnold in there. We'll see, but I don't think anybody really expected this to be a 35 point a game offense anyway. So if Darnold can come in and kind of handle the ship, handle business, McCarthy won't start at all this year, and it's a different conversation next year. But that's a situation I think that Minnesota is okay with.
It's also a different story, too. When I look at Minnesota, they have, if you're a quarterback, between Jefferson, Addison, Hockenson, that's a pretty good group to at least start throwing the football to.
Yeah, they love to throw. They're not a team. Kevin O'Connell's not a guy that really wants to have to run the ball. The adage goes, regardless of how much you want to commit to the run, there will be games, multiple games for every team that you're going to have to throw to win. Whether that's circumstantial, whether it's due to injuries, whether it's due to falling behind, you're going to have to throw the ball to win. Darnold's a guy with excellent physical tools. You know, he's got a great arm. No one's ever questioned him about that. We've seen that in the, you know, nine different stops he's had in the NFL or whatever it is now. He can sling it, and they have the weapons out there for him. So it's intriguing to see if they let him uncork it a bit, be a bit aggressive. I'm not sure they want to do that with the kind of defense that they have. This is a building year for the Vikings, but it's a good opportunity, exactly as you said, to utilize one of the more underrated skill position teams in the league. They should be able to be an effective passing offense if they can get something from their quarterback. Now, Darnold can throw. Does he know where he's throwing it? You know, a couple teams in Darnold's rearview mirror would probably say, no, we're not really convinced that he can. But I do think you can put him in a system and within a fairly conservative structure and have some success just with the playmakers that they have. You know, keep the ball short, try to get them in space. I think T.J. Hockenson's one of the best all-around tight ends in the game. There's a lot you can do with him as a receiver as well as a downfield blocker. You can set stuff up. Jordan Addison, very quick, great after run-after-catch guy. And obviously Justin Jefferson's the best receiver in football. So a lot of things they can do, and you know, I think he could be worse off than having Sam Darnold as your quarterback. And I think that's why the Vikings gave him $10 million instead of, you know, your market rate of about seven and a half.
What's your initial read on Caleb Williams?
We saw some quintessential Caleb when he got out of the pocket in one preseason game. And the one thing that was noted, I thought this was funny, when he left the pocket, he had both hands on the football. That's not something he did in college. And it makes you nervous, you know, when you watch it. But when he gets out on the move like that, those out routes become weapons. You know, you can get a guy on a secondary route. Williams can put that thing 25 yards downfield on a dime right at the edge of the sideline. They had a big completion like that. He can make those plays. The thing with him, and this is fair of every quarterback in the league, how much do they want the quarterback to play on schedule? How much freedom are you giving them to get out and make plays down the field? It's easier said than done. They're not going to give him a whole lot of opportunity to make huge plays down the field in a lot of offenses. They're going to want him to be a bit more rhythmic with what he's doing. I'm not sure exactly what the Bears are going to have him do, but I'll say this. You're not going to find a whole lot of people, living or dead, that have been blessed with more arm talent than that kid has. I mean, he can sling. Very accurate, great deep ball thrower, great athlete. He's a gamer. He's got that kind of, you know, swagger to him. He wants to go out and make plays. Now, how many plays are you going to be able to make when you're going up against college competition versus the NFL? I think he's going to find that out, to be honest. I would not have thought, as good as I think Caleb Williams can be and as high a ceiling as he has, he's the type that's going to struggle his rookie year because he's going to have to figure out structure. He's going to have to figure out the speed of the game while playing, quote-unquote, slower than he's used to. That's a hard thing to adapt to. All of a sudden, your defense is a lot faster than what you're used to. You can't just get out and beat guys on sheer talent alone. It's going to have to be set up. It's going to have to be something that you've studied, practiced, and executed. Not to suggest he can't do that. It's just there's a learning curve involved. I didn't really think, honestly, any of the quarterbacks in this class were going to be, day one guys with, you know, lofty expectations. I mean, Williams is the one who's going to start. And I think he's going to have a couple games here and there, but he's going to turn the ball over a bit. He's going to have probably a few rough games as well, but you draft traits, and he's got them. You know, he's got them coming out everywhere, and I think you'll see a lot of Caleb Williams types of plays. I just don't think it's going to come as often as you would hope for the things he's going to try to do.
Yeah, the college scouting report on him was simple. He is great in havoc situations. The problem is he actually is the one that creates the havoc. All right, so... So now we get to the Steelers situation. We know Russell Wilson's one, Justin Fields is two. So what's your general thought on how it's playing out in terms of practicality?
I think from what we've seen to this point, you hate to say this because you understand it's preseason. You really don't want to put a whole lot into results. You know, you can't evaluate the preseason in a results-based manner, but two fumbled snaps, that's not solely on your center, and it's not solely on your quarterback. It's on both of them. One time can be one person's fault. Twice is both people's fault, and that's an issue. In my opinion, I've made this very clear. I don't think there's any reason in the world why Zach Frazier shouldn't be getting every rep at center anyway. If Justin Fields is to be a backup, he's had plenty of opportunity in camp to get used to the guys who are around him. From a results perspective, we didn't see a whole lot that we probably liked much in the passing game. In fact, I would even say I think you could replace this with the same offense that we saw in preseason 2 years ago. It didn't give you a whole lot of you know, there wasn't a great sense of optimism. And, of course, though, the fair counter to that is Kenny Pickett looked like an MVP last year in the preseason. And he did, legitimately. So, again, results-based thinking is not necessarily how you want to go about it. It was the first preseason game. Fields, though, has had the bulk of the snaps. If he's not going to be the starter, you wonder where Russell Wilson is going to be with this injury. How long is it going to take him to be able to play the game the way that he knows how to play it? It's a new offense. It's a new team. You know, they're not intentionally trying to split the reps. They just did because of Wilson's injury. So is he going to be up to speed physically? That's a concern. When you look at the way the rest of the offense function, put in another quarterback now and see what happens. You know, that's a problem, and that's something they're going to have to figure out. You know, camp breaks tomorrow. They got, you know, the one shells practice left and two preseason games. Call it one preseason game, really. And beyond that, you know, week one versus Atlanta is coming up here pretty quick. So they still have a lot to go over, and I'm not trying to say that, you know, the preseason should be everything, but I would have thought we would have seen a little bit more pop in what they were doing, a little bit better execution. But you do have, you know, a young offensive line. They're guys that are moving around different positions. We knew the bar, to put it mildly, the bar is not set real high for them offensively. And any quarterback coming in should be excited with the idea that it's not going to take much for us to do better than what this team did last year, and they won 10 games. So we should be able to be more effective than we were last season. I didn't get a great feeling of that through one preseason game, and Fields certainly looked like a backup quarterback to me. I would have thought there'd be less talk about him potentially starting, but no, that conversation will continue to go on, I guess, for a while.
Yeah, amazing. So now we're at this point with him. What about help around him? There was all that talk about Brandon Ayuk. Didn't come to fruition. They wanted two number ones. The Steelers weren't going to do that. But does that tell you anything about what they think about their offense, their receiving core? And then I want to add him about Russell Wilson for a moment. I know he's wearing flak jackets and things like that, but, man, he looked in Denver bigger to me and slower to me. So what about Ayuk, the receiving core, and then about Russell Wilson?
The news circulating around now is that Pittsburgh and San Francisco have something of a deal together, and it's a question of whether or not Ayuk is going to sign the extension he's been offered from San Francisco. Now, that's a compensation thing between Pittsburgh and San Francisco. It's not a contract with the Steelers. That's a separate argument, a separate conversation that they would have. I don't know where they are with that. The sense that I get from it is Pittsburgh is where Ayuk wants to go. And if that's the case, I would logically think that it's because they've come to terms on an extension, one that San Francisco doesn't want to give Pittsburgh. But I would also think that San Francisco, in an effort to find a conclusion to all of this, would say, okay, go talk to other teams, set your market, let's see where it is. We're offering you this. If you get better than this and we get the compensation that we want in a trade, we'll trade you. If not, this deal is on the table. I think that's probably what's happening now, but it really does seem like a legitimate option here that the Steelers could acquire Ayuk via trade from San Francisco, and I would think that would be something that would come at the end of camp. I know Pittsburgh's ends tomorrow. I'm not sure where San Francisco is in their schedule, but for San Francisco's sake, this is a deal that should have been done before the draft, and maybe the asking price at that point was too high, and now they're looking to just get something for him, whatever that might be. I don't think it's going to be cheap, but they'll get some return on it. Word is that they wanted a player. I really don't see how the Steelers could trade a wide receiver. That's the reason why they're acquiring Ayuk to begin with. So I don't know how much depth they feel that they have, but maybe they do. Maybe they get a deal done. I will say this, though. There is a Brandon Ayuk-shaped hole within their entire offensive plan this offseason. They went out and got the quarterback that they needed. They added, again, to the offensive line. They've put massive amounts of upgrades into their offensive line. They have a new coordinator, which they desperately needed. A new wide receivers coach, probably a good idea for them to explore that direction. What they don't have, though, is a multi-depth, multi-route alpha type of receiver. And the fact that they didn't really address that specifically in the draft, Roman Wilson is not going to be that kind of guy, certainly not his rookie year. They don't have that legitimate all routes, all depths kind of guy. I hesitate to call him a number one receiver. That's a fantasy football distinction. It's not a real football thing. But you know, they've had a guy that they want to get the ball 130 plus targets a year to, 8.5 targets a game to. Most years, pretty much every year since like Hines Ward. So it's a franchise that's used to having that kind of guy. And with all due respect to George Pickens, he's not that guy. That's not where he is in his development. It's not his highest and best role. He's a great deep receiver. Incidentally, Ayuk is very similar to that. They were 1 and 2 in yards per catch last season. So the idea of adding both of them probably bringing Ayuk in a bit closer along with running deep stuff, it opens their offense up in ways that I don't think Pittsburgh has really seen. You know, that's a lot of talent to have in your top two wideouts. And I really think Pittsburgh has been, I don't want to say counting on this, but they have the cap space available for a big contract, and they didn't sign anybody. They typically wait until, you know, right before week one before, you know, cutting off any extension with anybody else. But it's there for them to take. It's the shallowest receiver room I think that they've had in the last 30 years. I mean, they barely threw the ball down the field the last time they had less talent at the wide receiver position, 1 through 5. So it seems to me like they've been preparing for this. And it sounds like it might actually happen. Now, if it doesn't, I honestly don't know what they're going to do. They're not going to throw the ball a whole lot, would be my guess.
Yeah, no, I agree. They will not throw the ball a lot, or whatever they do is going to be careful, because it just seems that at this stage of Russell Wilson's career, adventurous, which what he was at times with Seattle, is not in the cards for him anymore. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think, you know, to get to your original question about his physical shape, I agree with you. Russ has always been built more like a shortstop than a quarterback,
which is what he was.
Muscular.
Which is what he was in college.
Yeah,
and that's what caused him to leave NC State, because Tom O'Brien was the coach there, and when he was a fourth round pick of the Colorado Rockies, he actually went and played some games with the Rockies, and he said, "You aren't fully committed to us," so he left and went to Wisconsin, and now he's in the NFL.
Yeah, and his numbers showed that he wasn't fully committed to baseball either.
But right, exactly.
He failed up, for sure. You have to like what he's done with his career, but where is his career? One thing you saw with Wilson last year. Well, he's throwing an accurate deep ball. Now, completion percentage and catchable balls thrown down the field are two different things. He's accurate throwing deep. So what I see, if they're adding Ayuk and looking at what Arthur Smith has done in his career, it really kind of seems like they want to have these vertical threats, dual vertical threats, to go alongside of an underneath attack in a possession kind of passing game, mm-hmm. not making it overly difficult for the quarterback to read everything that's going on. Pretty simple. Get rid of the ball here. This is what we're going to do here. Set Wilson up for success with how he is successful. And he can throw the ball deep. He can read stuff underneath and get rid of it quickly. Utilize the athleticism that they've added to the offensive line, blocking downfield with RPOs and things like that. I can see where they might be successful. At the same time, to me, just my useless two cents, it feels like a house of cards, because if you're cutting off that deep stuff and all you have is underneath, you're playing Canada ball again, and teams are kind of used to that coming out of Pittsburgh. Wilson's not going to be able to throw himself out of that at the intermediate level. There's not a whole lot of – there's not another option is what I'm saying. You know, you're building it up for a pretty superficial level of strategy. But I will say this, with all due respect to Matt Canada, I don't think we've seen a worse coordinator in the last 30 years. So I feel like – they've thought ahead of this. They might have better options than I'm thinking that they do. But you're going to challenge your receiver depth. Let's see what this young, talented tight end room can do. And you're going to have to get a lot of run out of your offensive line. And that's on top of the assumption, which is really not smart in the NFL anymore, the assumption that you're going to have two running backs that both play 17 games and are effective. Yeah. Right. Depth is going to be a challenge within what they want to do. But, exactly as you're implying, it comes down to Wilson and his body's ability to make it through, the course of the season. And looking at him, I don't know. He doesn't move as well as he did, that's for sure. He was never a runner. He can move around the pocket, though. So we'll see. We'll see. I don't know how confident I am, but I don't think they're going to ask him to do a whole lot either. He just should be set up to do the things that he can do.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, and News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai is 43 new Hyundais away from their all-time sales record through August. With 134 new Hyundais to choose from, plus deep discounts and low interest rates, SMC is going to break this record. Sunbury Motors has 48 2024 Tucson's available, starting at $32,568, or get 1.99% financing for 60 months. Looking for the most versatile compact truck on the planet? Take up to $3,000 off the 2024 Santa Cruz. The Santa Cruz starts at $31,247. And there's 16 in stock. Here you go, car buyers. SMC has 11 2024 Elantras with 1.99% financing for 60 months. And Elantras start at just $22,960. If you want to have a fun day, you have to buy a Hyundai. We're breaking the record in August with 43 new Hyundai sold. Hurry in to Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, another huge success to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. We're proud to be a part of it. And proud for the majority of our shots. I didn't say all of them. I said the majority. And you have a multitude of insurance needs, auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. And they'll handle them all. And sometimes they may bundle. And other times they may and do everything they can to save you money. I mean, they really are a customer service, customer-oriented group. Purdy Insurance, Market Street, and Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. What do you think about the observation, Todd, when Neil and I were talking about Russell Wilson and weight? Because, I mean, I know he's wearing a flak jacket. I've got that. But, man, he seems bigger and less mobile than I remember him in his earlier days with Seattle.
I think he is bigger. I think he's walking a line of, trying to get bigger to absorb hits. And, you know, when he's gotten bigger, I think he's lost a little bit of his mobility, obviously. And I think that's caused him some problems. One of the lost things in that run in Seattle is he got hit a lot. The scrambling quarterbacks naturally get hit a lot. And then, you know, the Seahawks pass-blocking offensive line at that time wasn't the world's greatest. And he took a lot of hits. I think it's a combo of being a little heavier, and he's just beat up now. I mean, it's hard to believe he's in his 30s. It seems like it hasn't been that long because time flies now. But I just think it's a matter of age, and he's trying to figure out a way to absorb those hits without losing his mobility. And I think the weight kind of, I think he lost the battle is what ended up happening.
I agree with you. I think so too. I think, you know, he got older, and with that, got thicker. And you can just see, especially with Denver, he made plays with his feet in Seattle. You know, he wasn't a running quarterback, but boy, when he had to run, he made plays happen. When he had to scramble a bit, he made some plays happen. You watch him 2 years in Denver, and he may have ended every interview with "Let's ride," but I can tell you right now, he's the only one that was out there that wasn't riding because he wasn't moving well enough to ride.
Well, and I think some of that too is Sean Payton's offense. I don't think Sean Payton wants, you know, like Neil said about Caleb Williams, wants his quarterback to improvise a whole heck of a lot. And I think that's kind of one of Russell's strengths. And I think when it happened, I fell into the Sean Payton, I don't want to say hype, because I think he is a good football coach, but I just don't think I don't think from the beginning it was a good match between coach and quarterback.
No, it was not. It was not a good match between coach and quarterback. But, you know, and that's why I think he moved on from it as quickly as he did. I mean, he didn't exactly sit there and stick with him. He moved on because I think he knew right away. He says, "This isn't him. This guy is not going to work for me at all." And that's why they moved on. Now, whether they think they have a solution or not, I don't know. But that is, the Steeler deal. When you look at Zach Frazier, kid they got from Washington, Roderick Jones, they've got the makings of a pretty good offensive line. That's what he needs. He needs an offensive line that will protect him. And Neil's right. The ability to throw the deep ball is not as evident now as it was a couple of years ago with Seattle. Just not there. And that's a big thing not to have in today's NFL. You still need to have the deep ball, even though everybody has transitioned to playing heavy cover two and they're trying to take away deep plays. They would rather see you go 10 plays, 75 yards, than go 4 plays, 75 yards. Right? And that's really is how Wilson has to play now, out of necessity, and has nothing to do with cover two.
Who takes the top off the defense for the Steelers right now if they don't get Ayuk? I think that's a problem, too. I think
Pickens.
maybe a little bit. I think that's maybe that end, if they don't get Ayuk, I think that ends up being Freiermuth's job down the middle of the field is kind of more the deep target than as the tight end, more than they have receivers to do it right now.
Right. That's where they are. I mean, first of all, the Steeler defense has a chance to be really good. So you start with that. They have Pickens, they have Freiermuth, but they need, you're right, they don't have the take the top off guy. I mean, you know, Pickens has to be that guy, but they don't have a guy opposite him right now that is good enough for you to not sit there and double the other guy. I mean, double Pickens. And that's where they are right now offensively. The Steelers are going to win some games 24-17, 20-17. I mean, that's how they're going to win games. They won 10 of them last year. Remember, there was everybody kept thinking it was going to be the first losing season for Mike Tomlin. It wasn't. Still won 10. Got to give him credit. So,
but I mean, are they still the fourth best team talent wise? I guess it depends on how you feel about Cleveland going into the season, which is worrisome in that division.
Cincinnati's interesting in that they have a great quarterback, a couple of great wide receivers, good running back, good defense, but the offensive line is still problematic. How well will Joe Burrow play after coming off an injury? We'll see. Lamar Jackson has had a very shaky start with Baltimore in the preseason. I mean, I think it's the only way to describe it. He's been shaky. Right? Baltimore should be the best team in the division. Cleveland, look, nobody knows how good Deshaun Watson's going to be. Nobody. You want to talk about a guy whose performance level has fallen off the cliff since getting Houston into the playoffs and that day they lost to Kansas City. They're like, boy, the best days for this guy are in front of him. And his off-the-field actions, combined with a couple of other things, have seen his production drop dramatically. Dropped. So I don't know. I don't think anybody knows who the best team is. I mean, Baltimore should be the best team in the division. After that, I think two is up for grabs.
And that was the first thing that popped into my head about Cleveland is you don't know which Deshaun Watson. I mean, I think I feel pretty confident that he would be the second best quarterback in that division. Lamar and Joe, I guess, is tied for first at this point, depending on what happens in my head. But I mean, he was so good in those two seasons in Texas, you know, in Houston, and it's really fallen off a cliff. I mean, look how good they were when they brought 110-year-old Joe Flacco off the bench last year when he got hurt.
I know, exactly. I mean, it tells you they've got some talent, and they've got a major league first overall draft pick defensive end in Myles Garrett, and that is, you know, I mean, Cleveland has some things going for them. I mean, they aren't that bad. Yeah.
How many times in our lives have we said that? The Cleveland Browns have something going for them.
Probably not since Brian Sipe. all right, so let's get very quickly to the Florida State-Clemson deal. Now, they're going to go into mediation. Okay. And, of course, that's the typical conflict resolution process. It's supposed to be mutually beneficial to both sides. The mediator doesn't decide the outcome. All right. The ACC has shown no willingness to resolve the dispute. Okay. Now, they would have to compromise on exit fees, about the grant of rights, and they're not going to do it. Okay. So this is a step that has to be taken. And remember, today's the 13th. Well, Thursday is the deadline where a school must give the conference a one-year notice about participating. So if there's nothing from Clemson or Florida State on Thursday, then they're committed to playing in the 25-26 season. Okay. Right? And they say by 2027, the league will be receiving, let's face it, the Big Ten and the SEC are going to get $30 to $35 million more per school than any ACC school. Okay. Now, they're trying to put together some sort of incentive. All right. Well, the incentive could be as much as $25 million. Okay. But Clemson and Florida State feel that if they leave the ACC, they're going to have a line waiting for them from the Big Ten and the SEC. Now, the problem is you're not going to have a Big Ten school or an SEC school say, gee, instead of getting $75 million from our TV deal, because we added Florida State and Clemson, we're going to have to take 65. What? No, especially not now when a $22 million bill is going to be due to pay athletes. Oh. Right? And TV networks are going to sit there and go, oh, good, Florida State. Hey, we'll kick in the extra, let's see, what's 75 million times six? That's, what, $450 million? They're not going to kick in $450 million more for 6 years. Please. What sane company does that? That's right. All these places with streaming. We lost $600 million, but we feel good. Okay, great. So they'd have to kick in more than $100 million a year to do this. That's $600 million for Big Ten. Then there's the ESPN contract. We've talked about it. They're sitting there that it goes to 2036. But there is an opt-in that ESPN has to trigger for 9 years. Okay? The deal actually ends in 2027, but there's an opt-in that brings you to 36. ESPN must elect by next February to opt in for the 9 years. And the ACC and ESPN have been negotiating over the extension. And Jim Phillips says they've been positive and productive. That's what the suit told you and I. And we're still sitting here waiting for answers. No?
I was going to say, I think that's the same. Even if they weren't positive and productive, what else could he say?
Right. Now, the question is, maybe ESPN, marginally, but somewhat, increases the numbers. And Phillips says they are talking about at least getting a little bit more money out of them. Because part of what this deal that they have with them, which was the second grant of rights, involved them owning and operating the ACC network. ESPN owning and operating the ACC network. That's why the second grant of rights was needed. Because of that. And that's something a lot of people don't talk about as to the reasons why. Thursday's a big day to opt in for 25-26. And if nothing happens, then they are allegedly bound to be there 25-26. Okay, that's fine. We'll take a break. We will come back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewer's Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
You want a unique way to display your brand. You need a team of seasoned experts to work with. You want to reach customers who buy. You want NIL Game Changers, a versatile consulting agency powered by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents. NIL Game Changers will help you build powerful relationships with customers through compelling stories, with student athlete influencers as your leading edge. Finally, we'll equip you with the right media to drive your success home. NILGameChangers.org, building meaningful relationships with your customers.
Is the suit even in the building?
His car was here when I pulled in.
So not outselling again, huh? Okay.
You can sell via phone.
Yeah, that's a nice theory. Man, we got high school football coming up. What, a week from Friday?
Yep. They scrimmage Thursday. First games are opening nights Friday night.
Wow. You know, and the weather looks, I mean, the advance forecast looks like it's going to be in the 70s. So it's like we're not going to talk about blistering hot opening nights, which that's good.
I'm knocking on wood. I just want a calm opening night. Last year wasn't too bad, but the previous two years we had thunderstorms. I didn't get out of Southern Berwick till after 11, and Selinge Grove Pottsville to almost 10 of 11. So I just wanted not to rain.
Wow. I don't want that. I don't want that for the players. I don't want that for the coaches. I absolutely don't want that for the fans. But, geez, can you believe that opening night for high school football? I mean, we're going to be doing our high school roundtable a week from Thursday.
I just don't know where my summer went.
Yeah.
Selinge Grove starts school next Wednesday. The daughter goes back to school already.
Wow. Yeah, it is. Well, when the season starts earlier like that, and I know the first day of classes here at Penn State will be the 26th, so it's 2 weeks from Friday, or 2 weeks from Monday, I mean. But we get to this time, you always ask yourself, kind of wish it would last a little longer, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
With the football season, we're sitting here talking in the summer, and it's going to feel like I close my eyes and open it up, and it's Christmas time already.
Yeah, I mean, I realize now with the playoff, see, it bothers me that the season doesn't go to the first weekend in November. I'm talking about the regular season, and that it ends in October. November is great football weather. That's me. I mean, again, we didn't have playoffs when I played. So we ended our season on Thanksgiving Day.
It is when you start doing research and you look back into the 90s and the early 2000s, I mean, yeah, they were playing regular season games to mid-November back then and then doing the playoffs, but the playoffs weren't as big. I think that's obviously part of the issue. I mean, it takes us 3 weeks in November just to play district playoffs before we get to states.
They should only have four teams in the district
You're preaching to the choir, man.
I mean, because there's only four that really have earned their way to be there. That's just me. I think there are only four, and I think you just got to sit there and say, here are the four, and then go from there. And, I mean, when you get to eight, I mean, at that point, you're just padding the field with participation trophies.
Or you're getting somebody the ability to get beat by 60 points in the first round.
Yeah, which is just really fun.